I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo,
a gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Welcome into another episode of The Memo. It is Thursday, November 12th, 2015. I'm Brad Locke. I'm back, and Chris Kiefer is here with me. Derek Russell, not technically with us. We'll get to that in a moment, but hey.
What's hey. Up? A little bit of a confusing explanation. Yes, welcome back.
Yeah, I was out yesterday. I got this thing with my eye that's still a thing, but I decided I'd come in and gross everybody out with it.
Tough it out.
Yeah, well, anyway, y'all made a show without me yesterday, and I assume it went okay.
It was all right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, okay, well, what'd you expect?
We made it.
Maybe today will be
short. Lauren did a good job.
Yeah.
Always does.
Yeah. So, yeah, Derek is basically out. He's got a lot of stuff to do, but we do have a pre-recorded interview that he did with Neil McCoy of the Tupelo Convention and Visitors Bureau, our first in-studio guest, not employed by the Journal.
Right.
So we'll have that up here in just a few
big
minutes.
Day.
And do what?
Big day.
It is a big day. It's Thursday, last show of the week. And just a reminder, you can... If you're on the Twitter, check us out at DJournalMemo. We'll always update you on when the show drops three times a week.
Brad, you were talking about you were out yesterday. I'll let you know if you haven't listened yet that Derek took it easy on you, and we've not revealed your middle name yet.
Oh, good.
I won't do it now because I would.
You want Derek to be here?
Derek would kill me if I spoiled the fun. So
yeah. Well, good. That's
maybe Monday.
Something a little cliffhanger for people to come back next week. Find out my middle name. It's not Wayne. Again, that was my radio name. We got a good show though. Even though Derek's basically not here, we're gonna have Scott Morris on to review the latest Bond film. I want to go see that. We've got William Moore going to come in and talk about the Major Thoroughfare Program, about the long-term plan that is expected to be approved by the City Council next week. So looking at the road maintenance and just kind of what things may look like in 2035 in Tupelo.
The flying cars.
Flying cars. Thought we'd have them by now, but
2015, that's what I was promised when I was growing up and
Me
went
too.
To the movies.
Yeah, the Jetsons lied to us. I don't even know. When was the Jetsons set? Was there a year it was set in? I'm trying to think because I haven't seen it in like 20 years.
Not when it came out, but when it was actually set. I don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah, well, you can look it up.
Yeah,
that's what Google's for.
What Google's saying.
And what else we got on the show, Chris? We got
Ray
Van Dusen. That's who we got. Yeah, from the Monroe Journal, talking about this auction with some Whitney Houston memorabilia. Pretty cool.
Yeah, we got a couple more years for the Jetsons. 2062.
Oh, so that's when it was set, 2060. Well,
set.
Surely by then we'll have flying cars.
let's hope so.
I would think so.
We got another almost 50 years to go.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, let's go ahead and dive into the show, and we'll start off with Neil McCoy.
All right. Well, we're excited to have our first in-studio guest. You're the first podcast guest, Neil McCoy, Executive Director of Tupelo Convention and Visitors Bureau.
I'm really the first.
You're it.
Wow.
We saved
quite
it
an
for
honor.
You. We all these other people wanted to come. The mayor wanted. We were like, no. Neil's coming. So.
That's awesome. I'm going to remind him of that,
you
too.
That.
Well, thank you. I mean, I'm honored to be here. It's a very cool podcast. I've enjoyed it and glad to be a part of it.
Well, thank you. We're happy to have you in the studio today. You just recently got back from a trip across the pond. Very recently. When did you guys get back? Over the weekend?
Yeah, we got back Friday night. We kind of joke when we travel, we always kind of lose track of time. And so anytime somebody asks what time it is, we usually say purple,
mm-hmm.
you know, because time is, you know, just kind of irrelevant at that moment. But yeah, we got back Friday night. We were there from Monday morning until Friday morning with a pretty good agenda. And it was a successful trip. And, you know, It was a good trip that, one, I think, you know, we took the mayor with us. It's the first time we've invited a mayor to go on one of these international missions. And so I think he saw some things from his perspective that maybe he has never looked at it before. I mean, this mayor and a lot of our previous mayors have certainly gotten what tourism is about.
Mm-hmm.
But Jason has stepped in from day one and talked about how tourism is an important part to drive our economy and the sales tax. And so I think he had some aha moments while he was over there to see just how competitive the tourism industry is from a global market perspective.
Undoubtedly, and the one thing that ties us to London specifically in this O2 exhibit is Elvis Presley, which is what brought you guys over there.
Right, right. There was a one of the top three largest travel trade shows was going on. It's called World Travel Market, and they have a London show. And as what happens is destinations, Tupelo, the state of Mississippi, Las Vegas was there, New York was there. And every corner of the globe was represented with a presentation or a booth space. And, you know, just think Dubai and Abu Dhabi and Switzerland, you know. And so that's who you're standing next to in this marketplace. And so what happens is these tour and travel operators that book these itineraries for their customers come by and find out what's new in your destination or what itinerary can they sell to their customers. Well, and just like most every other trade show, their time at night is very valuable. You want to network and visit with them outside of your scheduled appointment time. And so we were fortunate enough to be invited by Graceland and the Memphis CVB to partner with a reception for these travel operators and media partners in the UK to host them at the Elvis at O2 exhibit, which has been extremely successful. And the kicker in it and kind of the headline or the hook was that Priscilla was going to be in London at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so we had Priscilla Presley attend the networking reception with all these travel operators and media partners. And, you know, to have her stand up and talk about how she wants people to come to Graceland. And, oh, by the way, you have to go to this charming small little town just south of Memphis called Tupelo, where Elvis was born in the first 13 years of his life. And she bragged on what the Birthplace Foundation has been doing to preserve Elvis's legacy here in his hometown. So that you know, that was such a ringing endorsement. And all the while, behind her and the mayor when he spoke, was a quote by John Lennon that said, before Elvis, there was nothing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, those things just, it was very much the stars were aligned for us. The fact that the conference was going on and that the Elvis at O2 exhibit was still going on, because it was scheduled to already closed. But it's been so popular, they extended it through January. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to host that. Priscilla was there. And the O2 is massive. I don't know if people just have it in their mind how massive of a complex this is. But while we were hosting our thing, this little band called U2 was playing at the O2 Arena. So we had to wait for Priscilla because she went to visit with Bono before the concert. So we had to put all of our folks on hold. Enjoy a few more appetizers while we wait on Priscilla. But it was very nice, and it was a very much a success.
If you could have gotten Bono to come on with her and talk a little bit.
Right. I mean, I don't know what.
The stars were very aligned, but not that aligned.
I don't know why those 40,000 people couldn't wait for him to come by and visit with us.
You know? We need to talk about Elvis and Tupelo for a minute. Right. If we could.
Yeah.
He can sing Joshua Tree in a little while in its entirety. How endeavoring is this to put together? I mean, you said the stars align, and perfectly they did for this with mm-hmm. Priscilla and everything, but just the planning of something like this and working with the Tupelo CVB and Memphis CVB working together, how does that work out?
Yeah, so about once a year, sometimes twice a year, we go up and visit with the marketing team at Graceland, and they're wonderful partners, and I can't overstate how great of a relationship we have with Graceland. But we were just sitting around the table, much like what we're doing here, just kind of talking about what strategies do you have and what's something on the horizon that you might, where we could maybe share some advertising dollars together and you know, kind of get a broader reach. And they mentioned that they would be doing the World Travel Market and that they would be hosting the reception. And there was a possibility that Priscilla would be there. And so we were like, oh, we would love to be a part of that, because Priscilla had just been in Tupelo within the last year, mm-hmm. and she's familiar with the Tupelo product. And so they said, okay, well, you're in. We just got to kind of work out details. Well, when you're talking about Priscilla Presley and Sony Records, things don't exactly happen at a very fast pace.
It's not a call you get back later that afternoon.
Exactly. So about 6 weeks out, we finally got the call that said Sony is in, they're on board. And so it worked out. So because we had gone up to Graceland and because we had done the work that we usually do and just sitting around the table kind of talking shop with their marketing team, they said let's do this, and it worked out. And you know, we couldn't do all of that without the state of Mississippi. Also, they have a partnership that we get to participate in for free. There's no charge to the Tupelo CVB or to the city, where they have a contracted representative in the UK, and so he represents Memphis CVB and the state of Mississippi. And what he does is he's the connection to all the travel agents. I mean, it would be crazy to think that somebody in our office could make the connections with all the tour and travel operators. But that's what he does over there. So we have one connection, one piece of conduit that connects us to everybody.
That's more than a full-time job for the amount of traffic that comes here from overseas.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And so we leverage that connection to schedule appointments, to call on these folks, to say, you know, we looked at the top travel operators that are taking tours to the birthplace, and we said, look, we want to, you know, here's the top five tour and travel operators. We want to meet with these folks while we're in London. And he set us up some scheduled appointments. And so we met with one of them. It's a company called Newmarket. And the representative from Newmarket that we met with is going to be in the States attending a trade show later this month. He'll be in Charlotte. And he was telling us that he's got to go to Memphis to work out a deal with a hotel that he's having some issues with. Right after that trade show, and we said, well, hey, while you're in Memphis, we're only 90 miles down the road. Why don't you take a little journey down to Tupelo to see the product that we have, and let's talk about creating some overnight stays in Tupelo. We know you're coming. We know you're bringing this many people each year. Well, let's talk about an itinerary where we can create an overnight stay in Tupelo instead of just a day trip. Mm-hmm. And you come down, see the city for yourself, and that way you get a firsthand account of how you can build the itinerary around our charming small southern town with a wonderful downtown and all the attractions, the Automobile Museum, the Birthplace, the Natchez Trace Parkway. I said, you know, you see it for yourself. And so he committed to it. So when he's in Memphis, he's going to take a day trip down to here. And we're going to show him all the hotel product that we have to offer. We're going to show him downtown. We're going to show him all the attractions. And hopefully he goes back and says, yes, Tupelo is worth an overnight stay on our next itinerary. So that's how those things work. It doesn't happen overnight. You know, he didn't commit on the spot to doing overnight stays. Now we have to come back and do our work to get the hotels prepared to work with him, to get them at a price point to where they can make money and the hotels can make money. So, you know, the work continues, but that's how – It is very much a process.
It's an evolving process mm-hmm. with that. Well, good deal. Just aside the actual O2 exhibit that has gotten so much press, and I've seen images and video come out of Graceland for it, how vast is this thing?
Oh, it is really, really well done. I didn't know kind of what to picture mm-hmm. from a space standpoint. And, you know, I was told that the Tupelo part was really well done, and it's set up in a chronological order of his life. So when you first start, you see the humble beginnings in Tupelo. You see some of the archives that they still have from the Presley family from their time here. And then you get into his early days and, you know, the Louisiana Hayride. And then you get into the Ed Sullivan appearances and how he just, you know, took off from there. And so it just chronologically, it tells the story of Elvis. And it is so well done. It was really, really amazing, the presentation. And I think that's that exhibit, from what I was told, the first 2 weeks that it was open outsold the previous exhibit in that same space at the O2, which was King Tut.
Oh, wow.
In 2 weeks, it outsold their tickets.
That's impressive.
They underestimated the amount of souvenirs and gifts that would be sold, and they could not, literally that first month, they could not keep product on the shelves. And so they just now, as they're winding down, have a comfort level with how much inventory they should keep in the gift shop. And I asked the question of what's next. And I anticipate, they didn't tell me this, they wouldn't come out and tell me for probably obvious reasons, but I anticipate it going to another European city just because of the success they had in the UK.
How long have they extended it through now that it was supposed to close and it's kept going?
Yeah, so the I think the date is January 10th,
oh,
so
wow.
The weekend after his birthday in 2016. So it opened in January of 2015. It was supposed to have closed August, September of this year, and just they ticket sales were still going, and they just said let's extend it. So
if it's not broke,
yeah. So it'll have about a 1 year run in that space, wow. Which is really unheard of.
That is really impressive. Was this your first time in London?
No, I've been several times to London. I think it's probably the fourth or fifth time there, and still you're just amazed at. You know, we take it for granted here. Mm-hmm. We really do. Elvis is still very popular there. And we always get the question of, you know, how much longer can Elvis be relevant? Well, the age for the person buying the ticket at Graceland is trending down. And they're still having great sales. It's not like it's trending down because they're not coming. They're still coming. I think it's just that they've done a good job of reintroducing Elvis to a younger market and making him relevant and hip and cool. To a newer generation.
Yeah, I agree. And there's also an exhibit in Vegas going on. Is that true?
Yeah.
As well? Have you been to it yet?
No, haven't been to it. Okay. I do know that Angie Marchese, the lady that does all the archives and all, she's between the O2 and Elvis in Vegas exhibit. And what they're doing now, they're doing like an archives presentation. Mm-hmm. So they'll go each day, they do a presentation. They'll bring something out of archives that you don't see on a regular basis, and they present it, and they tell you the story about it. I think she's getting a little stressed.
I would imagine.
Because it's funny that, you know, we had an agreement with them to display some of Elvis's jumpsuits in our lobby here in Tupelo. Mm-hmm. And they've just said, you know, we don't have the inventory to send you anything.
Yeah.
So I think that which is great. You know, I mean, that's that many more people are seeing and hearing and learning about Elvis. But, you know, at the same time, we're like, can we have something? You know, is there like fingernail clippers or not something?
Send the toothbrush.
Right.
Just send the toothbrush.
Right, exactly. So, but, you know, there's some interesting things here in Tupelo and, you know, with the work that's been done on the Overlook. And it's a fantastic place to see a sunset and to just spend some time of reflection. You know, it is certainly worth visiting. And that's the thing that we tell these folks when we make these trips is it's not the same thing you saw 3 or 4 years ago.
Right.
There's something new here. There's, you know, come back. And see it. And, it's, and the birthplace is the draw, but there's so much more in Tupelo that they can see that when they travel, you know, they travel to Memphis. And while Memphis has got its own mystique and its own draw, it's not a small southern town like what we know. And so Tupelo kind of gives them that element of a small southern Americana type city. And because of because of the fact we have a wonderful downtown that we're continuing to invest in, we continue to have something to go and share to say, come back and see us.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody plays a part in it.
Yeah. Neil McCoy, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. The first guest.
First man. One.
I'm honored.
We're honored. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, we head to the phone lines now. We're going to speak with Ray Van Dusen, managing editor of the Monroe Journal, one of our sister papers. Ray, how's it going?
Good. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, man. I'm going to talk to you for a couple of minutes about this story you had the other day. Pretty interesting stuff. This guy from Aberdeen, his name is Dwight Stevens, huge Whitney Houston fan, and has a lot of Whitney Houston memorabilia. And it's going to go on auction, November 21st? Can you tell us a little bit about that auction?
Yeah, actually, it's going to be at Nashville's Gaylord Opry Resort, and it's going to be November the 21st, and he's got several Whitney Houston dresses and things from that were previously stored in a storage unit in New Jersey, and he's got several different dresses. Like, I think that the keynote dress is going to be the one that she wore when she debuted I Will Always Love You, but all these dresses were part of the Bodyguard World Tour in the early 90s. So, yeah. I mean, it's really interesting. I'll definitely say that.
And he owns Stevens Auction Company, but still, I mean, how does he get his hands on these items?
Yeah, basically, he had, it was my understanding that he was friends with someone who had acquired these dresses, who had gotten them from an auction from the storage unit that they were stored in New Jersey. And I think that was in 2007, I believe. And I think before that, they were acquired in an auction in Los Angeles, if I remember correctly.
Okay, well, that's pretty cool. And again, how big of a Whitney Houston fan is this guy? He said he's seen The Bodyguard at least 10 times. I haven't seen it once, but
yeah, the same way. I've never seen it myself, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, he said he definitely kept on saying that Whitney Houston was the best singer of her time, no doubt about it. You know, as far as when he became a Whitney Houston fan, I'm really not sure. I think, let's say, I believe he said that "I Will Always Love You" is his favorite Whitney Houston song, if I remember correctly. So,
okay. I know there's I expect there'd be a lot of interest in this memorabilia, and your story mentions that country singer Miranda Lambert might be interested. What kind of interest does he expect this to draw?
It's actually pretty huge. He said that he's gotten several emails and several phone calls from several European nations, and he's also gotten phone calls from the Middle East as well. And basically, with some of his bigger auctions, I mean, they advertise internationally.
Yeah.
Because in addition to the call-in auctions and the people who come on site, you can also do the online auctions as well. So it should bring in a lot of interest.
Yeah, and to find out more about the auction online, go to StevensAuction.com. Stevens with a V, StevensAuction.com. All right, good stuff, Ray. Appreciate you coming on today, man.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me.
Okay, let's get William Moore in here to talk with us about roads.
Major roads, as in major thoroughfares.
Yeah, it's kind of a thing here in Deep Low. You got the major thoroughfare committee. They've got a 20-year plan. City Council expected, I guess, to accept it next week at its council meeting. So you're looking ahead down to basically 2035, and you know, 20 years ahead, things are going to look different. We'll have flying cars by then, I'm sure, and so they'll have to account for that. No,
personal jetpacks.
Exactly.
We've been waiting for those since the 50s.
Yeah, I know. Where's my jetpack? So kind of what are a couple of the main focuses here that they're looking at?
Oh, there are a lot of different things. I mean, they're trying to envision the needs of the city 20 years down the road and try to go ahead and be proactive. And part of the discussion is how much money to move from the special, I mean, you know, major thoroughfare is funded by a special 10 mil tax levy.
Right.
The concept now is to move some of that money away from just building roads to use a portion of it to actually help maintaining roads.
Right.
Because they've been building roads for the past 20 years. Now they have a bunch of 20-year-old roads.
Yeah.
That nobody has done anything to for 20 years. So that's part of the process, is trying to figure out how much money goes to that. And then they also have to try to figure out, all right, what projects do we need to look at and how important are they to me? Are these things that need to be done within this upcoming 5-year program, or can they wait 10, 15 years down the road?
There's a lot of things you could talk about here. One thing that kind of sticks out to me is this, the talk of frontage roads, which in Tupelo, you don't really have any, I guess. I've lived in smaller towns that had frontage roads all along the interstate. As far as Tupelo, where would we see those if we see them?
Well, I think people have seen what happened to the whole North Gloucester-Barnes Crossing area. I mean, there's been a lot of massive development over the past 15 to 20 years.
Yeah. And there's sort of a couple of frontage roads there, I guess, sort of.
Sort of, kind of, but there's nothing just in a traditional sense of a frontage road.
Right.
So, I mean, they've seen what happens if you sort of piecemeal projects together. So what they're looking at now is, you know, especially along the northern loop.
Yeah.
To take a bigger role in the development and design process.
Sure.
To go ahead and create or almost mandate frontage roads along major developments just as a way to help get traffic off the main road and move them in and out of these different commercial areas smoother. Because you get in some of the places up around the mall, it's an adventure just to get in and out of, you know, a large parking lot.
Especially this time of year. It's just ridiculous.
True. Well, I mean, it's only going to get worse. I mean, that's one of the reasons why they're trying to figure that out. Something else, sort of a byproduct, we're talking about the fact that sometime in the coming month, they're going to have to start doing traffic studies up there just to see how much the Northern Loop has helped
alleviate
traffic.
Okay. It'd be interesting to find out the results of that. And I think it's helped, just from what I can tell. One of the planning projects listed is has to do with Main Street going from Coley on the west all the way east through Crosstown through downtown all the way to Veterans. And they're doing a study for that.
Part of the study that's tied into another thing that they're looking at for the 20-year plan was to improve the signalization. Yeah. You know, anybody who's traveled down that stretch of road, you know, at certain times of day, you know, it seems like you get hit by every stoplight.
Yeah, I know.
About 10 years ago, they started changing to more actuated signals where the light stays green on Main Street until somebody pulls across from the side street, which is good if you're coming through on a Sunday morning when there's not a whole lot of traffic.
Sure.
But you get any kind of rush hour, you're going to have a lot of folks going in and out of side streets, and it just sort of...
Right. Right.
Backs up traffic on Main Street. So they're looking at ways that they can try to coordinate to help the traffic flow better along Main Street.
Okay.
And that's one of the things they're trying to figure out, you know, all the way from basically from one end of town to the other.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because if you're going, you know, coordinate the traffic lights, you need to coordinate all of them, not just a handful of them.
Right. Something else that they're going to look at, which I think needs to be addressed, is that cluster of an interchange, 45 Front Street, McCullough. One, I don't know who designed that and how drunk they were when they designed it, but when I first moved here, I'm like, this is one of the most messed up interchanges and confusing as heck if you're not from here at first.
It's confusing, because when it started off, 45 wasn't four-laned at the time.
True.
And McCullough Boulevard was Highway 78 / Interstate 22.
Right.
So, and actually, and if you go back when it was designed, we were probably had... You know, the highest speed limits were still just 55 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So that whole interchange was designed for folks, not as many folks going through and folks going through at a slower pace.
Yeah. So it wasn't.
So you try to flow through there now doing 65.
No.
It's more than an adventure.
Yeah. You've seen, I think we've seen trucks overturn occasionally making that curve.
It's true. Folks going south on 45 can.
Yeah.
Hit the turn a little bit too fast and flip over.
I guess that was one of those things where it just wasn't really set up well for a well-designed expansion of the interchange at the time. I don't know. Well, I wasn't here then.
Part of the problem is you're sort of boxed in that area.
Yeah.
I mean, because you have...
There's really nowhere to go east.
Well, you have a couple of schools in there. You have Carver School.
That too.
You have the Green Street. You have east of Early Childhood Education Center.
Yeah.
And you have some cemeteries in that area. So there wasn't a whole lot of room that they could just get a nice, big, wide clover leaf. So they had to sort of run with what they had.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, one of the things, I mean, they want to have a study just to look to see what can be done. And it's one of those things there, they'll have the study, and chances are it'll come out the fact, well, it's going to cost a whole bunch of money.
Yeah.
And because it is state roads, it's going to be up to the State Department of Transportation to do anything.
Sure.
Unless the city wants to, you know, pony up money and say, we'll do this if you let us.
Right. Okay. Well, again, the council expected to approve this long-range plan next week. Anything else about this plan, this situation, stick out to you?
No, I mean, there's a bunch of things that they're trying to, you know, it's more like on a wish list kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. You know, well, basically what they're doing is they're trying to get this part approved because they're trying to get set up for the next major thoroughfare phase and its election.
Right.
So come December, the Major Thoroughfare Committee will come up with the actual list of projects they want to do in the next five-year program and present those, and the people will actually go vote on those. Right now, that citywide referendum is set for May 3rd.
May 3rd, okay.
Where people will get a chance to say either yes or no to extending the 10 mil tax for another 5 years.
Okay, well, y'all can find that story in Wednesday's Journal or at djournal.com. Good stuff, William. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I was working, but now I'm here. What do you want?
It's M. Scott Morris. It's Thursday. It's movie time. Hey, Scott.
Okay. Oh, you want me to make this podcast great again? Okay.
And why not? Hey, you got a movie review in today's journal over at djournal.com as well. The new Bond film, the latest installment called Spectre.
Spectre. I'm hearing this might be probably the last Daniel Craig.
That's what I've heard as well.
But he was a producer on this. I thought, well, if he's involved that much,
Interesting.
But apparently he's interested in moving on. I imagine it takes a toll on the old body after a while.
I'm sure it does. He's been a good Bond. And this movie, the previous one was Skyfall, which I really enjoyed. Yeah, one of my favorite ones in a while. I mean, again, he's been good in all of them, even though Casino Royale maybe was not as good, some people think. Spectre, a lot of people love it. But, Scott, you're not quite on board as much as everybody.
No, I'm in. I consider it a satisfactory time with the movies. I gave it a C.
Yeah.
You know, but this is a Bond movie, and a Bond movie has its own logic. So you on some levels you don't mind. So he's away from his organization. He's out rogue, but he knows exactly how to get a nice personal watercraft and a really nice set of suit of clothes to wear with it while he's going, and he knows how to get. So things happen, and I think this one's just a little bit too well put together for me. It's just like, well, there he is now. And, of course, there he is now. Oh, well, of course he's there now.
A little too slick, as you put it.
A little too slick.
Yeah.
A little too slick. Like some of the – I think some of the other Daniel Craig films been a little bit dirty, a little rough around the edge, a little what the heck's going on and trying to catch up.
Yeah.
And this time – not so much.
Right. But so with your typical Bond film, they tend to have a greater suspension –
no doubt
disbelief
about it.
Than most films, but in this case, maybe it doesn't work as well. You're saying?
Well, I just think that there's a lot of. Well, for instance, one of my critiques I didn't even write about in today's journal is if you saw Skyfall,
mm-hmm.
then you saw that the character who's playing M,
yeah.
he was very dubious of 007s and was thinking about getting rid of the program.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it makes sense. You know, the new versus the old, and he has to be proven. Well, then. We have the same thing going on now with a character called C, who's coming in as M's boss, and C doesn't care much. So it's almost like the same plot in that respect going on.
Yeah.
Although this story involves getting rid of the old license to kill, the man going out investigating, or woman as the case may be, investigating and then deciding whether or not to kill somebody. This time it's about drones, it's about collecting data over cameras, it's about being in cold rooms with a lot of electronics and people looking at the stuff and making decisions about who lives and who dies.
Yeah.
And so in that respect, I think they were throwing a bone to, They were trying to point out some things some of the questions we have in our own society right now.
Sure.
Which are legitimate questions.
Yeah.
And I guess but in a Bond film, is it better to have drones and all this data collection, or should we just let James Bond take care of it? I think in a Bond film, you kind of know going in what the answer is.
Yeah, exactly. But it does have your usual assortment of great action, which is kind of half the reason I see a Bond movie anyway.
A couple of really enjoyable helicopter aeronautics and battles and things going on. So, you know, if you're a fan of the helicopter.
Yeah.
And also, they open up in the Day of the Dead celebration in Mexico City, and I thought that whole opening sequence was filmed so well, and you kind of get you in, and I really felt like I was, obviously when you watch a movie, you don't know if you're getting in the culture, but I really felt like I was transported to that event, because there's all these people, and it's a Bond film, so almost all of them were attractive, but they're all dressed like with skulls and crossbones and ghosts and dressed up with finery, but also with skeletons. So that was fun to see.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So it had a lot of nice elements, and I'm there for it. I want to see how it ends. You're always going to pull for Bond.
Oh yeah.
But it just left me wanting more of a story, a little bit more depth to it.
Before you get out of here, Scott, there's been a lot of talk about it from people. If this is the last Daniel Craig Bond, who should be the next Bond? There's been a bunch of names out there. One I like, honestly, is Idris Elba. I kind of like that idea of him as the next Bond. It's a little different. But I like it.
You know, here's my issue about it. If they can make a good movie,
right?
I don't care who it is.
Right.
Black, white, male, female, even gay, straight. If they can make a good Bond film that I want to watch and care about the guy as he or she goes about the job of kicking butt and looking good doing it, I'm fine with it. And so to like put restrictions on it on what makes a good movie, what makes a good Bond movie, I'm open to whatever they want to do as long as they can pull it off.
Right.
If they give me a bad movie, I'm not going
to
enjoy it.
Yeah, you don't want them to go another direction, just go another direction as far right. as casting Bond. I mean, you want it to work. I mean, and I think Elba would be, you know, he's a good actor. Yeah,
and, you know, and you could argue that making a choice like him would add some energy and we have this sure. whole new thing. But then you could also say that it could also subtract some energy in that, well, we got this. We got to be, if we're going to risk this, we got to be safe in these other ways.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So yeah. You don't know what the, in the end, what should matter, I think Elba would tell you the same thing, what should matter is how good the movie is at the end.
Exactly.
And he's a fine actor, and he might do a great job providing he gets a great story and things yeah. come together. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, and then again, though, also, a lot of guys, and apparently, you know, Daniel Craig included, have made bad Bond movies.
Oh, yeah.
Not so great Bond movies.
Right.
So, you know, you don't want to hold somebody to a higher standard, but... You know, I'm kind of democratic, lowercase d. If you can make a good movie or that I want to see, then I don't care who you put in it.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff, Scott. Y'all can follow him on Twitter at @mscottmorris. Thank you, sir.
You know what? How about you as an ex-Bond? Do you have a British accent? Can you do an accent for us?
Don't even.
Come on,
no.
Let's hear it. Come on.
No, because
say cheerio, mate.
My wife and children, every time I affect a British accent, they just yell at me to stop.
Come on.
It's terrible.
This is for America's sake. Come on, do it.
Cheerio, mate.
See, that's
terrible.
That's horrible. That's horrible.
I told you.
That's terrible.
I cannot be Bond. Sorry, I have to dub all my lines.
All right,
thanks, Scott. All right, so I'm going to have to check out Spectre despite Scott's grade. I don't know about you, Chris, but I'm a sucker for a Bond film.
It's Bond. It's fun.
Yeah, it is.
You're not going for substance, I guess, anyway.
You're not. Let's be honest. The next deep Bond film will be the first,
right.
And that's fine.
Hey, we're talking about who's going to be the next Bond in that segment. You know, I heard someone the other day toss out Tom Brady, which I just was kind of a crazy idea.
That is a crazy idea, but hey, never count out Touchdown Tom.
They say because he looks good in a tuxedo.
Yeah, but can he affect a British accent?
That's
obviously
a good
question. I can't. We've learned that today, but
he might have to work on his high fives. I don't know if Bond has to do a lot of high fives. So
his awkward high fives. Go YouTube Tom Brady doing high fives. It's hilarious.
It is.
He is so white. He's whiter than I am, and that's saying something.
So what else is there to do this weekend?
Yeah, we got plenty of stuff happening as always.
Have Derek here, but we can still go through. He still has his scene section out today.
So yeah, he does. He had a nice centerpiece story on the Tupelo High School Theater Department doing a production called Seven Deadly Sins. A bit of a unique approach, basically a bunch of one act plays.
Yeah, so I think it's a separate act. For each of the seven, yeah, that'd be real interesting.
It opens tonight at 7:30, and it runs through Saturday. $8 for tickets. Again, it's at the Tupelo High School small auditorium. That's where it's at.
But not suitable for small children.
Not suitable for children under the age of 12.
But, you know, we talked about the Bond not having a lot of depth. If you're looking for something with a little more depth, you know, this will be your place to find it. There's a quote in Derek's story from one of the students, 17-year-old Josh Martin, and it's not the kind of quote you expect to hear from a 17-year-old, but it just talks about the depth of the play. It says, you're going to see something on stage, someone on stage that you know, or you're going to see a situation or experience you've been in before. When the show turns the mirror back at you and you have to think about your own flaws, that's when it's hard to call it entertaining. The audience would really rather not have to think about the challenges it presents, but it's a great conversation starter. And anyway, it's kind of real interesting to just kind of, I guess, kind of the depth of that you kind of get the emotions, the range of emotions. They talk about that a lot in this article too.
Yeah, it looks very interesting. Probably worth checking out. If you're into music, hey, Link Center, it's monthly music mix. Say that five times fast, Chris.
I got something else for you. Say five times fast in a second.
it's gonna feature classical guitarist Lily Afshar performing traditional Persian and Azerbaijani arrangements.
That's the word five times.
I'm not even sure I said it right the first time. I'm not going to butcher it further. So that's going on beginning Saturday at 7:30 p.m. Tickets $10 in advance, $12 at the door. Student tickets $6 in advance, $8 at the door. You can call 690-4011 for more info. And also,
I got something for you right here.
Yeah.
Saturday, you can work on your acting career at the Link Center's Actors Bash Workshop.
Yeah,
you going?
Actors Bash Workshop. I plan to go, unless something comes up, which in my life these days that can happen. But it's from 10 o'clock a.m. I think it's supposed to go till about 1, but it's not set. And basically what it is, and I've gone to one before. It's pretty cool. You go in there, you get a bunch of local writers and whatnot and directors that come in with their scripts, just pieces of something they've written. It might be just part of something larger they've written, or it might just be a standalone scene they've written that may turn into something later. But basically, it's just, you know, 2 or 3 pages of dialogue and whatnot, and you pair off with one other person. Maybe it's 2 or 3 other people, and you go through, take a few minutes to go through the lines and kind of figure out how you want to play it. And then you go in front of everybody, and you're down in the black box at Link Center. And you act it out in front of everybody else. And then after that, it's basically kind of like you've got the script right there. You're not expected to memorize the lines in those few minutes.
15 minutes.
So it's a script reading, but you get to, you know, really try to act. And you get some friendly critiques from the audience and some of the people there who really know what they're doing, like Glenn Payne and Casey Dillard. I believe they'll be there. It's really cool experience. Like I said, I did it a few months ago, and you know, again, it's just something I'm kind of a hobby I'm picking up, and something I'm trying to do more of. It's a little bit of acting, and it was really, really cool experience. I highly recommend it if that's something that you're into.
Do you have to come with some kind of script prepared?
No, you just
there'll be other people who have that, yeah, and then the you can
people,
just help
will be bringing scripts. I'm sure we'll probably Casey and Glenn will probably bring some material along with several other people. Got a lot of good talent locally. And speaking of Casey, she is in a production of
Dinner with Friends,
TCT off Broadway, Dinner with Friends, which I believe will be next weekend.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the 19th and 20th at 7:30. So that's what a play. Zach Orsborn has a story about it in the scene section today.
Yeah. And also Saturday night, West of Shake Rag, having a show.
This Saturday.
Yes, which features Casey, among other people, and Glenn, and then Carlton Wall, who's also in this Dinner with Friends. A lot of cool stuff to do this weekend, Chris. And again, I'm going to try to go to that Actors Bash workshop. So y'all need to come on out.
Check it out. Come meet Brad.
Nah.
Hopefully your eye will be all healed up by then.
I don't think. Yeah. Hopefully I won't scare people. I have to find a script with like a freak in it or something. I can play the freak. tickets are $15, by the way, for the Actors Bash. Well worth the money. So, okay, let's see. This is not the only podcast on today, by the way. We've got Double Coverage back today, the weekly college football podcast with Ole Miss beat reporter Parrish Alford and MSU beat reporter Logan Lowry. They are going to provide game previews, insight, commentary, and analysis. Check it out at doublecoverage.djournal.com. The Rebels are off this weekend, but State with a huge game against Alabama and could jump right into the middle of the SEC West race if they can pull off the upset. Dan Mullen is over against the Crimson Tide, but
and a big week for Ole Miss despite being off because of their loss to Arkansas last week, needing some help, I guess.
Ole Miss in a tough spot after losing that overtime thriller to the Razorbacks. But anyway, check out Parrish and Logan today, either on your iTunes or podcast apps, or again at doublecoverage.djournal.com. Need to remind y'all about the Bridal Expo. It's coming up Sunday, Chris. It's almost here. At Kingfisher Lodge.
Yeah, we've been talking about it for a while.
Kingfisher Lodge in Verona. There's a VIP hour opportunity from 1 to 2 p.m. Going to be consultants there. Going to have these little mini seminars. Going to be a fashion show featuring local dress, hair, makeup, and floral vendors. A lot of vendors going to be there just to kind of help you figure out how to make wedding planning little less painful.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to do, so have it all in one spot. It's, you know, if you got a wedding coming up in the next year, it's a great place to get a jump start on all that on Sunday.
And there will be door prizes, special offers, and a grand prize valued at $1,000. You can register today at bridaljournal.ms/expo.
Don't forget about Thrive Marketing. Thrive Marketing is a full-service digital marketing company located here in Tupelo, providing websites, search engine optimization, social media management, email, and text messaging services for local businesses. Brad uses Thrive Marketing.
I do. All right. I guess that's about it for this show. Again, you can follow us on Twitter at DJournalMemo. And, of course, the site for the podcast is memo.djournal.com.
Got it.
And you can follow me on Twitter if you want, at Brad Locke. That's Locke with an E.
And your new Twitter name now? MC Locke?
MC Locke. We were talking about me being a DJ the other day, so now my display name is MC Locke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had to get rid of Locktoberfest, unfortunately. That was a good one.
Thanks. Chris Kiefer is on Twitter at Chris Kiefer, K-I-E-F-F-E-R.
And the E is not silent. I guess it is.
Well, I-E, I-E. Don't know.
Whatever.
You don't have the E sound without the E. If it's I, it's just K-I-F-F-E-R. It's Kiefer.
Kiefer, so, yeah.
Maybe the I silent.
The E. I think it is. Yeah, it is. It is a silent I. There you go.
It's your own name. You think you know this.
I never thought about it before.
You can follow the Daily Journal feed on Twitter, at DJournalNow. Get all your news and updates with stuff happening in the area right there. And, of course, visit us at DJournal.com. That's it. Thank you all for tuning in. And we will be back Monday, Chris. Thanks for helping, bud.
My pleasure. Have a good weekend.